Section 2. The working period greater than the period of circulation. The working and turnover periods of capitals 1 and 2 cross one another instead of relieving one another. Simultaneously, some capital is set free. This was not so in the previously considered case. But this does not alter the fact that, as before, 1. The number of working periods of the total capital advanced is equal to the sum of the value of the annual product of both advanced portions of capital divided by the total capital advanced, and 2. The number of turnovers made by the total capital is equal to the sum of the two amounts turned over divided by the sum of the two advanced capitals. Here, too, we must consider both portions of capital as if they performed turnover movements entirely independent of each other. Thus, we assume once more that £100 are to be advanced weekly to the labour process. Let the working period last 6 weeks, requiring, therefore, every time an advance of £600, capital 1. Let the time of circulation be 3 weeks, so that the period of turnover is 9 weeks, as before. Let capital 2 of £300 step in during the 3 week circulation period of capital 1. Since capital 2 amounts to only £300, it can suffice only for a part of the working period. At the end of the 6 week, a product valued at £600 passes into circulation and returns in money form at the close of the 9th week. Then at the opening of the 7th week, capital 2 begins its activity and covers the requirements of the next working period, the 7th to 9th week. But according to our assumption, the working period is only half up at the end of the 9th week. Hence, capital 1 of £600, having just returned at the beginning of the 10th week, once more enters into operation and, with its £300, supplies the advances needed for the 10th to 12th week. This disposes of the second working period. A product value of £600 is in circulation and will return at the close of the 15th week. At the same time, £300, the amount of the original capital 2, are set free and are able to function in the first half of the following working period, that is to say, in the 13th to 15th week. After the lapse of these weeks, the £600 return, £300 of them suffice for the remainder of the working period, and £300 remain for the following working period. The thing, therefore, works as follows. First period of turnover. First to the 9th week. First working period, first to the 6th week. Capital 1, £600, performs its function. First period of circulation, 7th to the 9th week. End of the 9th week, £600 return. Second period of turnover, 7th to the 15th week. Second working period, 7th to the 12th week. First half, 7th to the 9th week. Capital 2, £300, performs its function. End of the 9th week, £600 return in money form. Capital 1. Second half, 10th to the 12th week, £300 of Capital 1 perform their function. The other £300 of Capital 1 remain freed. Second period of circulation, 13th to the 15th week. End of the 15th week, £600, half taken from Capital 1, half from Capital 2, return in the form of money. Third period of turnover, 13th to the 21st week. Third working period, 13th to the 18th week. First half, 13th to the 15th week, the freed £300 perform their function. End of 15th week, £600 return in money form. Second half, 16th to the 18th week. £300 of the returned £600 function. The other £300 again remain freed. Third period of circulation, 19th to the 21st week, at the close of which £600 again return in money form. In these £600, Capital One and Capital Two are now indistinguishably fused. And so there are 8 full turnover periods of a capital of £600. 1. First to the 9th week, 2. 7th to the 15th week, 3. 13th to the 21st, 4. 19th to the 27th, 5. 25th to the 33rd, 6. 31st to the 39th, 7. 37th to the 45th, 8. 43rd to the 51st week, to the end of the 51st week. But as the 49th to the 51st weeks fall within the 8th period of circulation, the £300 of freed capital must step in and keep production going. Thus the turnover at the end of the year is as follows. £600 have completed their circuit 8 times, making £4,800. In addition, we have the product of the last 3 weeks, 49th to the 51st, which, however, has completed only 1/3 of its circuit of 9 weeks, so that in the sum turned over, it counts for only 1/3 of its amount, £100. If, then, the annual product of 51 weeks is £5,100, the capital turned over is only £4,800 plus £100, or £4,900. The total capital advanced, £900, has therefore been turned over 5 4/9 times, a trifle more than in the first case. In the present example, we assumed a case in which the working time was 2/3 and the circulation time 1/3 of the period of turnover, that is, the working time was a simple multiple of the circulation time. The question now is whether capital is likewise set free in the way just shown, when this assumption is not made. Let us assume a working time of 5 weeks, a circulation time of 4 weeks, and a capital advance of £100 per week. First period of turnover, 1st to the 9th week. First working period, 1st to the 5th week. Capital 1, or £500, performs its function. First circulation period, 6th to the 9th week. End of 9th week, £500 return in money form. Second period of turnover, 6th to the 14th week. Second working period, 6th to the 10th week. First section, 6th to the 9th week, Capital 2 of £400 performs its function. End of 9th week, Capital 1 of £500 returns in money form. Second section, 10th week. £100 of the returned £500 perform their function. The remaining £400 are set free for the following working period. Second circulation period, 11th to the 14th week. End of the 14th week, £500 return in money form. Up to the end of the 14th week, 11th to the 14th, the £400 set free perform their function. £100 of the £500 then returned fill the requirements of the third working period, 11th to the 15th week, so that £400 are once more released for the fourth working period. The same thing is repeated in every working period. At its beginning, £400 are ready at hand, sufficing for the first 4 weeks. End of the fourth week, £500 return in money form, only £100 of which are needed for the last week, while the other £400 remain free for the next working period. Let us further assume a working period of 7 weeks, with a capital 1 of £700, a circulation period of 2 weeks, with a capital 2 of £200. In that case, the first period of turnover lasts from the 1st to the 9th week, its first working period from the 1st to the 7th week, with an advance of £700. Its first circulation period from the 8th to the 9th week. End of the 9th week, £700 flow back in money form. The second period of turnover, from the 8th to the 16th week, contains the second working period of the 8th to the 14th week. The requirements of the 8th and 9th weeks of this period are covered by Capital 2. End of the 9th week, the £700 return. Up to the close of this working period, 10th to the 14th week, £500 of this sum are used up. £200 remain free for the next working period. The second circulation period lasts from the 15th to the 16th week. End of the 16th week, £700 return once more. From now on, the same thing is repeated in every working period. The need for capital during the first 2 weeks is covered by the £200 set free at the close of the preceding working period. At the close of the second week, £700 return, but only 5 weeks remain of the working period, so that it can consume only £500. Therefore, £200 always remain free for the next working period. We find, then, that in the given case, where the working period has been assumed to be greater than the circulation period, the money capital will at all events have been set free at the close of each working period, which is of the same magnitude as Capital 2, advance for the circulation period. In our three illustrations, Capital 2 was £300 in the first, £400 in the second, and £200 in the third. Accordingly, the capital set free at the close of each working period was £300, £400, and £200, respectively. Section 3. The working period smaller than the circulation period. We begin by assuming once more a period of turnover of 9 weeks, of which 3 weeks are assigned to the working period, with an available capital 1 of £300. Let the circulation period be 6 weeks. For these 6 weeks, an additional capital of £600 is required, which we may divide in turn into two capitals of £300, each of them meeting the requirements of one working period. We then have three capitals of £300 each, of which £300 are always engaged in production, while £600 circulate. We have here the exact counterpart of case 1, in which the working period was equal to the period of circulation, with the only difference that now three capitals relieve one another instead of two. There is no intersection or intertwining of capitals. Each one of them can be traced separately to the end of the year. Just as in case 1, no capital is set free at the close of a working period. Capital 1 is completely laid out at the end of the third week, returns entirely at the end of the 9th, and resumes its functions at the beginning of the 10th week. Similarly with capitals 2 and 3. The regular and complete relief excludes any release of capital. The total turnover is as follows. Capital 1, 300 times 5 and 2 thirds, or £1,700. Capital 2, £300 times 5 and 1 third, or £1,600. Capital 3, £300 times 5, or £1,500. Total capital, £900 times 5 1/3, or £4,800. Let us now also take an illustration in which the circulation period is not an exact multiple of the working period. For instance, working period 4 weeks, circulation period 5 weeks. The corresponding amounts of capital would then be capital 1, £400, capital 2, £400, capital 3, £100. There is in this case an intertwining of capitals insofar as the working period of capital 2, which has no independent working period because it suffices for only 1 week, coincides with the first working week of capital 1. On the other hand, an amount of £100 equal to capital 3 is set free at the close of the working period of both capital 1 and 2. For if capital 3 fills up the first week of the second and all succeeding working periods of capital 1, and £400, the entire capital 1, return at the close of this first week, then only 3 weeks and a corresponding capital investment of £300 will remain for the rest of the working period of capital 1. The £200 thus set free suffice for the first week of the immediately following working period of capital 2. At the end of that week, the entire capital 2 of £400 returns. But since the working period already started can absorb only another £300, £100 are once more disengaged at its close, and so forth. We have, then, a release of capital at the close of a working period, whenever the circulation period is not a simple multiple of the working period. And this liberated capital is equal to that portion of the capital which has to fill up the excess of the circulation period over the working period, or over a multiple of working periods. In all cases investigated, it was assumed that both the working period and the circulation period remain the same throughout the year in any of the businesses here examined. This assumption was necessary if we wished to ascertain the influence of the time of circulation on the turnover and advancement of capital. That in reality this assumption is not so unconditionally valid, and that it frequently is not valid at all, does not alter the case in the least. In this entire section we have discussed only the turnovers of the circulating capital, not those of the fixed, for the simple reason that the question at issue has nothing to do with fixed capital. The instruments of labour, etc., employed in the process of production, form only fixed capital, inasmuch as their time of employment exceeds the period of turnover of the circulating capital, inasmuch as the period of time during which these instruments of labour continue to serve in perpetually repeated labour processes is greater than the period of turnover of the circulating capital, and hence equal to the n periods of turnover of the circulating capital. Regardless of whether the total time represented by these n periods of turnover of the circulating capital is longer or shorter, that portion of the productive capital which was advanced for this time in fixed capital is not advanced anew during its course. It continues its functions in its old use form. The difference is merely this. In proportion to the varying length of a single working period of each period of turnover of the circulating capital, the fixed capital gives up a greater or smaller part of its original value to the product of that working period, and proportionally to the duration of the circulation time of each period of turnover, this value part of the fixed capital given up to the product returns quicker or slower in money form. The nature of the subject we are discussing in this section, the turnover of the circulating portion of productive capital, derives from the very nature of this portion. The circulating capital employed in a working period cannot be applied in a new working period until it has completed its turnover until it has been transformed into commodity capital, from that into money capital, and from that back into productive capital. Hence, in order that the first working period may be immediately followed by a second, capital must be advanced anew and converted into the circulating elements of productive capital, and its quantity must be sufficient to fill the void occasioned by the circulation period of the circulating capital advanced, or the first working period. This is the source of the influence exerted by the length of the working period of the circulating capital over the scale of the labour process and the division of the advanced capital or the addition of the new portions of capital. This was precisely what we had to examine in this section.